This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available if at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
All right, the crossover is brought to you by Abundant Life Weight Loss. They know the secret to losing up to 1 pound of fat every day. Go to AbundantLifeWeightLoss.com, and I'm going to do something a little different.
Oh.
I'm going to play for Mark Willard and Dan Dibley what Steph Curry said this morning at Shoot Around and get their reaction.
This is new, and for all that I'm learning about how quickly you get back, there has to be a healing process that you... is just the way the body works. You can't accelerate it more than what it's telling you. So it'd be one of those after a week, like really reevaluating every day to kind of understand when it's safe just to even think about playing, let alone like how much can you push it.
I mean, yeah, just
I almost
out.
Teared up. I can't wait to hear you two.
I fully understand what I think you're fishing for is sort of the like, uh-oh, he's going to miss the whole series type of a thing.
Well, I think he might. And I think the team is preparing for that.
He absolutely might. I don't know about you guys. My mind was already kind of prepared for that. Mm. I've never thought game six was for sure. However, what I'm hearing him say there is, like, especially for a guy who's never had this before, no clue which direction this will go. Maybe he'll heal quicker than they think.
Yeah.
Maybe it'll be longer. But you can't, like, in other words, they've got the best equipment, right? The best rehab people. And certain injuries with that, you can speed them up. This isn't one of them.
No doubt.
So
when I heard Thompson.
You're at the mercy of, you know, whatever your spiritual thing is, you're at the mercy of that.
This week. And Dibs, when I heard this morning Marcus Thompson's article about, tears in the chef's eyes and Coach Kerr, you guys were great with him yesterday saying there were no words. I just embraced him. And you hear that lets me know, man, I'm hoping he's back. But like Willard said, he knows this is serious, I guess.
Yeah, it's serious, and it's something that he's never gone through before. And we're going to play the full Steph Curry press avail later in our show. And I know he sat there for 5 to 8 minutes or whatever, and he got asked a bunch of questions. And he even said something like, well, if it's an ankle or a knee, I know what that is. And that's what really struck me, because when you have the ankle and he sprained his left ankle 4 times and his right ankle 17 times, whatever the numbers are, when you do that and you've done that, you know what that is. And when you do the knee, and you remember he slipped on Lake Montezunas against Houston back in 2016, and he had the grade 2 MCL, shout out MCL sprains, and he had that MCL, it's like, whoa, that was new, but now you know what that is. He's never had a hamstring injury before, so he doesn't know what the return to play is going to be like. So when I hear what you played, Steiny, and he's like, yeah, you know, after a week, you know, we're going to see where it is, and we're going to see if it's safe, if it's even safe.
Wow. To think about.
Exactly.
That's wild.
For me, I've been thinking about game six as the return to play target.
Yeah.
It might, I don't think it'll be before that at all. But it might not even be until like the next round if you get there.
Like they would,
have to, I think they have to look at it Wednesday and say, wow, this looks
totally
better than expected.
Well,
let's shoot for Sunday.
But he still has to test it.
Yeah, I know.
Even then, everybody who's ever done the hamstring knows that as soon as it feels perfect.
That's what he said.
And you take off and no, it's not.
Oh.
And what my understanding, if you push and it comes back, it is often worse. Now, I don't know if this is a good comp or not, but I've had people bring this up to me the last few days. Like, think of Kevin Durant. You want to push through the muscular injury.
Oh, we know how that.
Come back and you can tear the thing completely. And so, yeah, they might need to do this without him. You think they can?
It's possible.
Now, when you say can, get through, obviously, Minnesota.
Whatever. Anything. Do you think that they can function through these playoffs without Steph Curry?
If Jimmy did what he did, and I know it was a few years ago, to answer your question, I feel like the way Dre, and I'm worried about Moody and Pods offensively, and they can change that narrative tonight because they're going to get the opportunity. To answer your question, Willard, I feel like they can. It'll look different, but I'm being real, not just with my Warrior da-dun-da-dun zone.
Minnesota.
Whoever comes out the next one.
I think, look, I'm making an assumption here that they even get there. I think the idea of the Warriors defeating Oklahoma City without Steph is laughable.
No. I think that's
Denver
too? Well, Denver?
No. Denver.
So it's different.
I can't figure them out. I don't think Denver's winning that series, but I said that last round. So, in a way, Denver is such a difficult defensive matchup. I don't know that Steph is the linchpin of that matchup. Mm. I just think I don't think the Warriors would have a chance against Oklahoma City without Steph.
Well, I think the best case scenario, obviously, is Curry doesn't play this series, but you get by.
Mm-hmm.
But even, and then Curry comes back.
Yeah.
But even if that happens, then you get into, well, how much effort did it take for the Warriors to beat the Timberwolves without Curry?
Right.
Like, now it's Draymond Green and Butler wear and tear. Because, again, they're going to end up playing about 10 games in 20 days, and that's a lot of games in a short period of time.
I like Steve's answer about that yesterday, though. For anybody who, you know, was kind of going, and I get it, like, I heard a caller on your show today, I think, kind of blame the refs.
Oh, man.
Well, he blamed the refs because, in other words,
he's,
like,
been exerting other energy in
in the Houston series, and that led to this, and whatever. We can all point to it, but all of the games they've had to play, could they have won Friday night and then given themselves some rest? Sure, they were allowed to do that. They didn't do that.
Man.
But Steve's answer yesterday was like, look, we all knew that this was on the table, but you have absolute, like, what's the other alternative? The alternative is we play Steph 32 minutes instead of 42 minutes, and then we lose. We wouldn't win. We don't beat Houston. So it's a known risk, and you have to take it, and here we are. Steph Curry and Jimmy Butler have both already missed games.
What do you feel like for tonight, though? Was that a one-off for many? Or do you think this Warrior defense, which is getting run, but it's they're tenacious, you know?
Yeah.
So do you think we could see something like that again to where they come back to the Bay up 2-0?
We could, yeah. I mean, we know that Minnesota won't come here up 2-0. We know that. But if I were a betting man, and I'm not on my team, or honestly, I don't bet on the NBA at all anymore. And last night's a great example. And, you know, Mark and I do our thing where we're doing the show and those 4 o'clock games will start. And I'll be like, hey, Mark, what do you got? And he's like, well, we're going to do this. We're going to do that. And I'm like, you know what? I like that. I like the player. I like the pick. And Mark's actually been really, really good. And then last night, he's like, we're going to do a Boston Moneyline.
I did something stupid.
But you had to do Boston.
We're doing Boston Moneyline. And we're going
to
parlay it into OKC minus 87 because OKC is going to win. And I'm like, you know what? I kind of like Boston minus the points, but I like your approach because, you know what? Boston's going to win the game, right?
I was
just trying to stick the odds in my favor because I loved Oklahoma City last night. I'm going to win by 1,000 points. I felt it. But then when you do that and you're like, whatever, let's say you want to throw 50 on it. You're like, yeah, you're going to win. You're going
to
win 40 for that. And I go, I got a way we could turn that into 60, which is parlay it with the Celtics, because for sure they're going to win the game. I did not like the spread, But for sure, the Celtics are evening this series 1-1 one way or another. And then you were the one, you texted me. Because I was walking through the city, heading to the car, and I was talking to people, had phone calls to make or whatever, and your text came through. It was like, and I thought it was still in process.
Man.
Not done. Guru sent me something along like, Boston's choking it away again. And I was like, you're kidding me. And then by the time I looked at it, it was already over. Didn't Paul Pierce say, did he have a
walk? He walked to work this morning, 15 miles or in a row, barefoot. Or,
in a row.
I mean,
you guys better be careful with those. I'll do this. Yeah.
You know, we saw two teams down 0-1 or two teams up 1-0 handle it differently. I think, you know, Denver's probably in a different spot than the Knicks. They got hammered, and I kind of thought the Knicks would get beat like that too, but
they were getting beat. They just came back.
The East is upside down. Are the Pacers going to play the Knicks in the Eastern Conference Finals? Is that where we're at?
And Cleveland's hurt before. Too.
No, no, no. Like, do you believe that's now going to happen? They both have.
I'm not saying Boston's dead.
They have
birds
in hand.
Yeah, but I just don't think. I think New York at home.
You're going to beat them 4 out of 5, and two of them need to be on the road.
I guess I could see that, man.
Oof. That's hard.
Or is this just a total meltdown? Because I think their coach thinks he's the smartest dude in the world. I don't like that. Missoula.
Deep dives dibs.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
How many times in the history of the NBA has a team lost games 1 and 2 at home and then rallied to win the series?
Oh, God, at home.
At home.
I want to say 6, Dibs.
Oh, I would guess lower.
Okay. I want to say 6.
The Bucks? Did the Bucks do it in the finals? Or did they?
Yeah, Phoenix. No, they were at home.
But was that bubble?
No, that was
pre-bubble. Yeah, it was pre-bubble.
The answer is 4 teams that have won a best of 7 after going home loss. And those teams are 4-24 all time. And the last one to do it is Boston in 2017.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's the percentage you're looking at.
Actually, I'm sorry. The last one was, and I mentioned this before, Clippers-Dallas 2021, where the road team won the first 6 games. Do you remember that series?
That's bubble, though, isn't it? 2021?
That was the first year post-bubble. 2020 was bubble.
But no fans?
2021 might have been, limited fans.
I think anything that happened between 2020 and 2021 doesn't matter with home or road because the environments were all messed up.
That's
you know what I mean? I'm not going to say they don't count, but being at home is not the same if there's nobody there.
Let me see if I get the attendance numbers for that game.
Don't make a lot of noise.
Real quick, Dibs, you're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM, and HD1 San Francisco, always live on the free Odyssey app, now broadcasting from the Laughing Monk Studios. Laughing Monk, righteously brewed in San Francisco.
Yeah, and that was 2021 where it was road, and then the Clippers won at home in Game 7.
Wow.
Luka, 46 in a loss. And Kristaps, 11 rebounds for Dallas. And the Mavericks lose to the Clippers by 15.
I actually remember that game. Luke had 46, you said?
Yep.
Yeah, he gave up 63.
A loss.
You know, Willard, you... Goo's heading out.
Yeah. Bye, Goo.
He's got...
it's okay. Yeah, we don't need to hide obligations. Your friend, but he's gay. He's hurt.
You asked me yesterday,
to the locker room.
You asked me yesterday, so what happened to Minnesota? What do you think happened?
Yeah, what do you think happened?
Here's what I think the biggest thing that happened. I'm a firm believer in that if you're playing a team that has unbelievably high intensity, you can't manufacture it before you play them. And the more I think about it, the more I'm looking at the Warriors playing Houston, and that was a dogfight. And they were playing at an intensity level in the first round significantly higher than the Minnesota Timberwolves.
For sure.
And when the Warriors finished up the Houston Rockets, even though they might have been a little tired or gassed, they had already established an intensity level that was good enough to beat the Houston Rockets. I don't think the Minnesota Timberwolves had to do that with the Lakers. And I think they came in and thought, you know, we'll play like we did against the Lakers. But that's not good enough against the Warriors or against any legitimate second round opponent. And I think they just got overwhelmed because, and now they might be like, oh, that's right. This is what
this is what happened in last year's Western Conference Finals when we thought we were playing hard, but we really, you know, that's kind of what I think happened. I think the Warriors really benefited from Houston ratcheting them up a notch.
That's probably fair. That's probably fair. And then I wonder about tonight because everybody's mental side is all sideways. Both teams. Both teams. I'm not going to underrate how difficult this is for Minnesota where, A, you're facing what is considered a must-win game. I know it's not, but you just have the stats, Dibs. When you lose one and two at home, you're probably dead.
Yep.
So you'll play it like it's a must-win game. However, the human nature of relaxing your shoulders, what happens to you mentally when the other team's best player is out is, I actually think, in a short term, is a problem for Minnesota right now. Because you almost look at this now, it's like, well, God, now we really should win. It's almost like all the pressure, and it's times two now, goes to the Timberwolves tonight. That's not easy for young players.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. Evan did some, I guess he did a deep dive, and because we saw something in a story, the Timberwolves have they've not fared well against teams without their stars. They clearly let down, and Evan had tracked like 7 or 8 games that they didn't do it. The only thing I would say is like, the whole idea of pressure, I think we view it as a negative, and I'm not convinced it is, because I think pressure can make you play more focused, and all those things. Like, yeah, the pressure's on the Minnesota Timberwolves tonight. I'll go along with that. We've seen teams rise to the occasion all the time.
No, it can be a good thing. It can also make you tight, though. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, how much of it? I think a little pressure is good. I think a lot of pressure, what do we watch young teams do usually in game 7? They come out and they play different. A lot of pressure. It gets very weighty. So to me, also, pressure is a living, breathing thing in the game.
You know what's funny is
you come out, you go up by 10, now you feel good. You come out in a game like this and the Warriors go up by 10, oh, crap.
I mean, the one thing I'll say, and Dibs, tell me what you think about this. Okay, the Timberwolves have pressure because it's game 2 and they don't want to go down 0-2. But to me, there's another, I think this is almost a little bit bigger pressure, is that you haven't made a 3 in 2 games.
Right.
You've had the 2 worst shooting performances in NBA playoff history. So I will give you, they make one of their first 11. That's a real thing. And that to me is, you know, whether it's game 2 or they can't make a shot, it's the same thing. They're going to feel something.
Yeah, for me, there's no pressure in that if you are coached the right way. And I do believe that they have a very good coach. And, you know, you guys are childhood friends, so you could speak to it more than I can. And I'm just playing up the bit. I know that you know him casually because you went to the same college. But if I'm Coach Finch and I look at those 2 games and I look at where we are, I go, you know what? No shoot around. I'm canceling shoot around because, guys, honestly, what you did the last 2 games, we're not that. We know we're not that. I don't want you to go out there and think that you are that. Just go out there and be you, because what they've been all year is number 5 in the league. I'm sorry, in the association, in 3-point percentage. They don't shoot as many as the Warriors, but they shoot it better than they have the last 2 games. So right. Honestly, if I'm Coach Finch, I'm taking the pressure off them by saying, you know, look, we know that we're not that bad. And yeah, the Warriors are a good defensive team, but just go out there and shoot. And you know what, Naz Reid, maybe you conduct a shooting clinic for all the fellas, and you know, you pull everyone aside and you work on their form, or you do something to make light of what they went through, because Minnesota's not that bad. The Warriors D was good, but the T-Wolves were like almost historically bad. And yeah, you even said it, Steiny.
They were
historically bad.
Yeah. Worst back-to-back 3-point shooting stretch by a team ever. In the playoffs, anyway.
And I look at this game, and, you know, the Warriors, as much as they don't want to have the mentality of house money, and Mark likes the term gravy, and it feels a little bit like gravy, where your best player is out for who knows how long, maybe a week, and we'll play Steph's comments coming up, but Steph won't play tonight, and he won't play in game 3 or 4, probably not 5, maybe not 6. So if you're the Warriors, this is a little bit of a deep breath game. Like, all right, if things aren't going our way early and often, well, then we can all kind of just, you know, go home and realize that the mission is accomplished. And, you know, you got the split in Minnesota. That's why I look at this game as being one that could, it could get ugly. It could get really ugly. And again, I'm not a betting man. If I was, I would take Minnesota and liquidate all assets and lay the 10.5.
Well, I think that the normal thought in a game two situation like this is, yeah, that home team comes out and plays well. Oklahoma City did it last night. Boston did it for most of the game, choked it away. Cleveland did it for most of the game, choked it away. Minnesota no different tonight. But what if, try this on for size. I think just in a vacuum, just this game, I think the Warriors have a better shot to win tonight because Steph is hurt than they would if he wasn't. And that may sound silly, but it's all about the mental game. And here's what I mean. Go back to game two in Houston. What happens when you win game one on the road and you're at full strength? It's very, very hard to not just relax a little bit, like our goal has been achieved. Let's go try to win. But the other team's going to have a lot of energy. And if we don't meet that early, okay, they're going to win that basketball game. The Warriors, on the other hand, are mentally now playing this series in a different way. Every opportunity to win a game, to extend it, to potentially get Steph back is golden. And you have to make good on every opportunity. So I actually think, while yes, pressure is all on Minnesota tonight, I also think the Warriors will come out maybe a little bit more intense than they would have, because they know that they just don't have the luxury of squandering opportunities.
I know what you're saying, and I don't disagree with it. I mean, you're not saying that the Warriors are better without Steph.
Oh, God, no.
You're saying the mental aspect or the psychology of it. I could see that, and then when I think about it that way, I immediately come to, oh, because I'm me. Well, let's talk about it pragmatically. You know, the recipe for the Warriors wins are usually Butler and Curry getting you 55, another guy getting you 18 to get you to 73 or 75, and a bunch of other guys chipping in for 25 or 30. Like, now they need, like somebody said, they need a reliable player in addition to a lot of the role players playing well. And, you know, that's challenging if you're trying to accomplish that with role players.
Please stand up.
Right.
Please stand up. Whoever it's going to be, please stand up.
Well, and you look at the one guy who has stood up so far over the last two games, it's Buddy Hield. And so, yeah, he's a role player, but no one's going to be Steph Curry. No one can approximate Steph Curry. But if you look at what Steph brings, and I think you mentioned this earlier, Steiny, the 7-turnover game is now off the table. Like, if Steph's not going to play, Jimmy Butler's not going to have a 7-turnover game. So can you get somebody to approximate Steph Curry's shooting? Well, that'd be Buddy. No one will be able to do that for his gravity, but you would need Pods and Quentin and Brandon Podziemski and whoever else to step up and fill the gap. I do think your defense is equally as good. And coming up later in our show, I'll take you back to 2016 when Steph Curry got hurt, and then he got hurt again in that the season that they actually didn't win the championship. But how did the team respond? Who was on that team, and how did they go about winning those games when Steph Curry, he got hurt against Houston in game one. Remember, he came back and he got hurt in game four. And when he got hurt in game four, he missed 2 weeks. So how did they go from there to where they eventually got through the next series against Portland? That's coming up.
Deep dive.
I've completely forgotten about it. Because remember, he hurt the ankle on Patrick Beverley, which is a name we need to remember when we talk about players who are like borderline dirty slash physical. Pat Bev.
So
he steps on Pat Bev's foot. He rolls the ankle. He misses 2.5 games. He comes back, and then he slipped on Lake Montezunas, which was a total innocent play. You remember Montezunas like dove across the court, and then Steph just kind of ran into his puddle, and the MCL went, and he missed 2 weeks.
Yep.
And how'd they do?
Well,
spoiler alert, they did well.
Different team.
And we can look at that team versus this team.
A lot of other options that this team does not have.
It's interesting you say that.
I did say that.
Yeah, and that's why I found it to be interesting.
I try to say as many interesting things as possible.
This team, in my opinion, this team has as many options, quote unquote, as that team.
Wait, what year?
16.
I know KD's not there yet.
No KD.
But there are too many players on that team that made an NBA living by being night in and night out offensive performers. I don't know that this team has any other than Jimmy Butler. I know that Buddy Hield is an offensive performer, but he's wildly inconsistent. I mean, literally just thinking of Klay Thompson and Sean Livingston off the bench alone,
I mean, Livingston's not an offensive performer per se.
Oh, my God. He would come off the bench and hit every shot.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
He ever took every 12 footer that he ever took went in,
and it's a different league.
It is.
You got Jimmy Butler, and that team had Iguodala.
Yes, Iguodala. Klay Thompson.
The key comp for me is, can Buddy Hield approximate Klay Thompson? And I'm not talking Game Six Klay.
And those names that we all just brought up were all I don't remember about Livingston, but everybody was in their 20s. Everybody was in their 20s.
Was 30. But if you want to talk about the depth. We can get into it.
Let's get into it.
Mo Spates?
Yeah, dude. That's a
Ian
knockdown.
Clark?
Yeah, but Mo Spates.
I mean,
Spates,
come on. What are we doing?
Mo Spates is a knockdown, spot up 15 footer.
Quentin Post.
Oh, God.
Are you telling me that Quentin Post does not have a chance to be as impactful as Mo Spates?
But I'm not going to use the word consistent. I mean, Quentin Post is, what's he played in his life? 40 games? And some of them, he shoots the ball 5 feet over the rim and he's totally played off the floor on defense. He's a rookie. I'm talking about people who've made a living doing this.
Yeah, Ian Clark.
Well.
Great example.
No, but
he's made a living doing
but
this.
But that's pretty far down the list.
All I'm saying is that team was pretty thin, and this team is a little bit thicker.
I disagree.
We can get into it. We'll talk about it.
I disagree. Where are you going?
I'm going to drive around the East Bay and look for.
That sounds fun.
And look for a house that's painted a color that we'd like to paint our house.
Wait a minute. How are we doing this?
We're going to go to Alameda and drive around look at houses.
Right. So, but just.
And when we find the right color.
How did you select the neighborhood that you're going to drive around in aimlessly?
We selected a neighborhood where we feel like the houses resemble ours in terms of what
they look
like.
He has a beautiful, like borderline five-story, old-school looking majestic. And Alameda, I think, is a good comp.
Thank you.
Much like Mo Spates and Quentin Post.
Well, and lastly, the one thing I'd be worried about if I were a Warrior fan is.
I'll change the subject.
They're going to, Buddy Hield's going to get guarded tonight.
Yeah.
So, all right.
So you're profiling.
What does that mean?
He's profiling houses.
You're profiling houses. You're looking for people who make about the same amount of money as you.
No, we're looking for the right color, Willard.
Yeah.
That's it.
But
we're
you not, could do yeah. that.
It doesn't have to be Benjamin Moore.
You could do
Moore.
That at Home Depot. Yeah, you could have a guy pull out a little slab.
Yeah, but we want to look at the whole house.
I know.
You're looking for something in the, not quite a lime green, but something between a light green and like a mustard yellow, I think.
All right.
Any chance of a Warrior logo on the house?
No, but
Steph did. He bought that thing for you.
Hey.
You said that he made your career.
Yes, but. I got a partner.
I know you've.
Yes.
I know that there's another career that led to this. I know.
Yes.
Look, that's what you guys did. Here's how you know portion. I love the job. I could retire tomorrow.
Yeah, you're 30%.
Be fine.
You're 30%. Could have a Warrior logo on it. or at least
in the backyard,
an Under Armour logo, right, maybe
in the man guys. Cave. Steiny, I'm not doing this.
Yeah, right. Lucas brought this up. 95.7 The Game logo, and he's the employee of the quarter.
Last quarter. I don't like his chances.
All right, guys,
repeat.
Bring it home tonight for everybody. Right. On 95.7 The Game.
What color do you want the home to be?
We'll see. I'll tell you tomorrow.
Anyway. Podcasting isn't just evolving. It's having a full-blown identity crisis. I'm Allison Marino, host of What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined, a new series that pulls back the curtain on the forces shaping the medium now and what that means for all of us who love podcasts. I'm really excited to share the official trailer where you'll hear from some of the biggest names in the space. Ira Glass, Leo Laporte, Guy Raz, Hernan Lopez, Lex Fridman, AJ Feliciano, Dan Granger, and yeah, me too. Here it is now.
I still want to kill the word podcast.
That's not just a hot take. It's a symptom of an identity crisis.
Big company run media, and people are trusting it less and less. It's really important that we're independent.
There's a handful of companies that control the vast majority of podcast inventory that have the vast majority of the gigantic shows.
We left radio behind for a reason. We wanted to get away from all the gatekeepers.
I don't know that you could do this as effectively in video.
Podcasting is at a crossroads. I've watched the industry swing from hype to consolidation to reinvention. But this time it's different. From the producers of the documentary Age of Audio, Oxford Road presents the Media Roundtable special series. What's a podcast? The Revolution Redefined.
All of us who work in the media, like, yeah, we got to run a business and like, we got to make a living and we got to sell our ads and we got to do all that. But we all got into it because like, I think most of us, like, it just gave us a feeling.
A three-part series where you'll hear the leading industry voices give their takes on what podcasting has become and where it's headed next. Teaming up with Oxford Road and Age of Audio director Sean Colon for this series was fun, but also kind of a wake-up call. If you love this medium as much as I do, you've got to listen to What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined. It's out now, wherever you get your podcasts.